Jai Radha Madhav Kunja Bihari Gopi Channa Balaka Gir Bardhari Jai Radha Madhav Kunja Bihari Gopi Channa Balava Giridhar Dhari Yashoda Nanana Bhaja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Bhaja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Channa Balaka Girivar Dhari Yashoda Nanana Vraja Vanya Ranjana Yashoda Nanana Vraja Vanya Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Hare Krishna, 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Radhesham Jaya Radhesham Radhesham Jaya Radhesham Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Krishna Balaram Krishna Balaram Vishnupad, Paramahansa, Paravachakachaya. Ashutra Prabhupada, Sri Swami, Ki Jai. Namacharya, Srila Haridas, Tak Ki Jai. Prem Shigaho, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the Sama Devotees, all glories to the Sama Devotees, all glories to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. Thank you. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, beautiful story of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're talking from the chapter about Brahma stealing the calves and the boys. And we're on text 23, I think we do 23, 24, 25. I'll just read the first couple ones.
Tato nipon mardanam ajalepana Lankara raksha tilakakshana dhipi samlalitakshva charitai praharshayam sayam gato yama yamena madhava.
Translation. Thereafter, O Maharaj Parikshit, as required according to scheduled round of his pastimes, Krishna returned in the evening, entered the house of each of the cowherd boys, and engaged exactly like the former boys, thus enlivening their mothers with transcendental pleasure. The mothers took care of the boys by massaging them with oil, bathing them, smearing their bodies with sandalwood pulp, and decorating them with ornaments, chanting protective mantras, decorating their bodies with tilak, and giving them food. In this way, the mothers served Krishna personally. Text 24.
Gavastato goshtam apecha satvaram hunkara goshai prarihuta sangatam svakan svakan vatsaran apayayayan muhurli hantyak shravad adasyam payaha.
Translation. Thereafter, all the cows entered their different sheds and began mooing loudly, calling for the respective calves. When the calves arrived, the mothers began licking the calves' bodies again and again and profusely feeding them with milk flowing from their milk bags. Purport. All the dealings between the calves and their respective mothers taking care of them were enacted by Krishna himself. This reminds me of the Goshal in Vrindavan. If you ever go there at milking time, it's so nice just to sit there and watch all the little calves. The mothers are already hooked up and they're in the sheds, and then the little calves are all together and they let them out and they just run and they like skid around the corner and they all go and try to find their mothers, and sometimes they go to the wrong one and the mothers kick them away, and it's really a lot of fun and really, really a great time to spend your time in Vrindavan just at the Goshala. Okay, so text 25.
Go gopinam maritasmin asit snehardikam vina purovarashvapi hares tokata mayaya vina. Gopinam matritasmin asit snehardikam vina purovat ashvapi hares tokata mayaya vina.
Please chant.
Go,
Vaishnavis? Gopinam. For both the cows and the gopis. The elderly cowherd women. Matrita. Motherly affection. Asmin. Unto Krishna. Asit. There ordinarily was. Sneha. Of affection. Ridhikam. Any increase. Vina. Without. Purafat. Like before. Asu. There was among the cows and gopis. Api. Although. Hare. Of Krishna. Tokata. Krishna is my son. Mayayavina. Without Maya. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Previously, from the very beginning, the gopis had motherly affection for Krishna. Indeed, their affection for Krishna exceeded even their affection for their own sons. In displaying their affection, they had thus distinguished between Krishna and their sons, but now that distinction disappeared. The distinction between one's own son and another's son is not unnatural. Many elderly women have motherly affection for the sons of others. They observe distinctions, however, between those other sons and their own. But now the elderly gopis could not distinguish between their own sons and Krishna, for since their own sons had been taken by Brahma, Krishna had expanded as their sons. Therefore, their extra affection for their sons, who were now Krishna himself, was due to bewilderment resembling that of Brahma. Previously, the mothers of Sridham, Sudham, Subal, and Krishna's other friends did not have the same affection for one another's sons, but now, the gopis treated all the boys as their own. Sukadeva Goswami, therefore, wanted to explain the increment of affection in terms of Krishna's bewilderment of Brahma, the gopis, the cows, and everyone else. So we're continuing this pastime, which seems to be like a favorite among many of the speakers so far, and also among the congregation. They go, oh, that's my favorite pastime. I like it, too. I like it mainly because it shows how enjoyable Krishna is in so many aspects. It's also in this particular port part is showing how if you put Krishna right in the center, if you really become Krishna conscious, your affection will grow and grow and grow beyond any limit. But Krishna is, like we heard yesterday, is having this pastime for the enjoyment of his dear gopis. So there, the gopis are enjoying, and Krishna's enjoying because he sees that they're happy. So that's his enjoyment. And we're all happy here 1,000 years later, getting to hear the story. So that's enjoyment. And then, I don't know about those cowherd boys, though. They're in the cave. Of course, it was just a little short time, but even separation, which would seem miserable, they're enjoying, too, because that increases their affection. So all around is enjoyment when Krishna is put in the center of your lives, just becoming Krishna conscious, just see that we'll never be miserable. But in the material world, when Krishna isn't in the center, then it's pretty miserable. Yesterday we were at the campus and some man came up with all his woes, you know, this. And I mean, it's amazing how much they suffer. I mean, they're really suffering, you know, losing his house and then a single parent and this and that. After he left, we go, whoa. We really got it good, you know. So there's a lot of misery out there. In their enjoyment, it's a big pain in the pocket because it costs so much money. It's miserable to have to pay all that money just for a teeny few minutes of enjoyment. And that's what they're doing. Some of them are wasting their whole lifetime just so they can, so their kids can enjoy or try to enjoy. And sometimes they, you know, get kicked away from their kids. So it's really miserable without Krishna. So, but here, it's so nice to see that Krishna is actually arranged a really transcendental upset for the whole village. You can imagine, all of a sudden, there's this epidemic of affection going around. All of a sudden, the neighbor next door is going, I don't understand. I just love my kids so much. And then the cows are like mooing extra affectionately, and more milk is coming. And then down the street, the cowherd boys are like, "Whoa, I don't understand. You know, can't wait to see, my son." And so the whole village is like, completely upset. And Krishna's just kind of laughing inside, watching it all happen. So it's really a wonderful sight that we can enjoy. But even more amazing than this is that Krishna is sitting right in next to us in our hearts. I mean, just that close. He's there in their families or there as their calves, but Krishna's right in our heart this whole time. And because of all the crust and the crudation on top, we just have been missing out on all this enjoyment. So it's really amazing that we can be so in illusion. That he's the closest thing, but he's the farthest thing too. The farthest thing from so many people's minds. But even more amazing than that is that he will reveal himself to us, to each one of us in this room right now, if we make him the center of our lives. And so it's a great challenge for us to actually to learn how to make our hearts a very fertile field so that when the spiritual master puts that little bhakti lata bij, that it will take root and that it will grow and grow and grow. And that by the guidance of the spiritual master, we can learn how to water it, we can learn how to care for it, protect it, how we can fertilize it, and we can watch this increment of affection even grow within our hearts. So this is really the most amazing thing, that all we really have to do is become very, very sincere, submissive servants of our spiritual master, because this is the most endearing thing to Krishna, as that we are, in this lifetime, taking the time out and making it a priority in our lives this lifetime to become submissive to his most dear friend, the pure devotee. So that is our job. And it's up to us, really. If we choose to make a priority in our life, and then if we do choose to take the devotional service, then when we're calling Krishna every day to come and to hear our prayers and to engage us in his service, then we have to actually be there for Krishna. If we ask him to come, then we have to be there consciously, attentively, be there in all of our services and all of our practices of sadhana. And this is becomes our life work, and to gradually become not distracted by anything materially. And this is actually what great saints and sages have done. They've actually chosen that in this lifetime I'm going to not be distracted by anything. I'll do whatever I have to do. I'll join a monastery. I'll do whatever. I'll go to the woods. We hear of so many great saints and sages in all the different religions of the world. They're all revered, for thousands of years, hundreds of years we hear about them. And then we have Srila Prabhupada right now, the greatest saint. No more distractions. I've decided I'm not going to be distracted anymore by anything in this material world. I'm just going to sit down tightly and make Krishna the center of my life. That's all, the priority. And so hearing about these great saints and sages is very, very purifying. And for me, it's very encouraging, even from other religions. St. Francis of Assisi and so many different ones are very inspiring. So today is also the appearance day of Madhvacharya, a great saint in our line. And so I thought I would talk a little bit about him. Maybe we can become enlivened to follow in his big, giant footsteps. But Madhvacharya, if you think about it, we're in his line, the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Actually, when Lord Chaitanya was on the planet, he studied profusely Madhvacharya's works. He and his followers would actually see that many of his principles, nine in general, were exactly the same as Lord Chaitanya's Vaishnavism. And so he actually studied these and adopted these principles along with his own, and then he compiled this his whole movement and philosophy. So it's very important that we understand Madhvacharya, what a powerful person he was, and what he had to deal with at this time, because Sankaracharya had been on the planet and all throughout India and had done what he was supposed to do. He had to, defeat this Buddhism, and he had to kind of like start from scratch and say, okay, now let's get back to the Vedic, understanding. So he just taught the very basic principles, but it ended up to be in the flavor of Mayavadi, of impersonalism. So now Madhvacharya has to come and preach all over India again and reestablish this dualism which he taught, being that we, the soul, and Krishna are two. So he was born about 8 miles from Udupi. I've been there. It's Udupi is quite south, and it's actually his temple there in Udupi is a big, very big complex, and you can walk around there for quite a while and see his deity, and you can meet the sannyasis there. I actually got to. We had our girls with us at that time, and we got a special darshan with the sannyasi at that time who was in charge of the temple. And we honored prasadam with him, and he was very friendly. They really like all of us, the Vaishnavas from Lord Chaitanya's Hare Krishna movement, very much, and gave us great facility. And at night, they'd take the small little deity on this beautiful golden palanquin all around the city every night. And it's quite festive. The whole city is kind of centered around that deity, which is a small cowherd boy. So he was born in a Brahmin family about 8 miles from there in Tulanadi. And when he was young, he was known as Vasudev. And he, even when he was small, he was kind of showing signs that he was going to be an ascetic of some type. And at 5 years old, he got his sacred thread. And sometimes his parents couldn't find him, and they would look around and he'd be missing, and then they would go and see that he had gone to temples, even when he was like, very small. He'd gone to different temples and was talking to the priests and actually studying with them and learning how to worship. And so his parents were like, uh-oh, what's going to happen next? And sure enough, by the time he was 12, he was ready to take sannyas. And his father was not in favor of this by any means, but he was pretty determined to, like I say, to make that choice, to not have any distractions. So at the age of 12, he took sannyas. Actually, it's described and it has been revealed that Madhvacharya was an incarnation of Vayu, and there are three incarnations of Vayu. The first one was Hanuman and Ram's Leela, which has something to do with today's celebration. And then also in the Pandavas, he was Bhima. And then now he's taken, as Madhvacharya, he is disguised as a sannyas. And he was preaching, going all over India. He was born in 1238. He took his, he incarnated. And so also when he was young, he wasn't too interested in learning the alphabets and things like that. He much rather go out and swim and do athletic things, wrestle and go hiking and things like that, which proved to be very beneficial for his service later on. He had a very, very stout, strong body, unbelievably strong. But even though he didn't really like all this learning, somehow or other he passed all exams with flying colors. And throughout his life he learned 8 languages. He learned Sanskrit and Hindi and Telugu and also with some other ones, Turkish, Persian. I mean, not easy languages to learn, but he was super sharp. And he did do some spiritual studies under Achyuta Preksha, and actually that became his guru. And he received a name, Pranapragya, which was showing how he had such vast learning. Spiritually, he was very, very astute. But his spiritual master was influenced by the Sankhya philosophy, and so sometimes they would get in some debates, and it was a little uncomfortable for both of them. When he was small, also he did some miracles, as most, you know, incarnations of Krishna did. One time there was a demon in the form of a snake, Maniman, and he was in the village. And this was when Ananda Tirtha, that's another one of his names, Madhvacharya was very small. And he actually went over and killed that huge snake with the toe of his left foot, somehow or other, finished. The demon was killed. He also, one time his father accumulated many debts, and he took some tamarind seeds and said, a little boy walked over and gave him some tamarind seeds that changed into gold and paid off all his debts. And sometimes his mother would be disturbed and he would all of a sudden jump and land right in front of his mother. So he was, did some pretty marvelous things. And his stature was, like I said, was very big. Actually, his Brahmin family was in the line of the Brahmin warrior of Parshuram. So he also had a very large body, very strong body, and his thighs were like trunks of elephants, and his gait was like a lion. And he had beautiful lotus eyes and dark golden complexion, and his voice was beautiful. And his recitation of the Bhagavatam was superb, just so melodious. So he had so many qualities. It's described that the maker of sacred images would consider him their model of all their art, because he was so beautiful and so marvelous features. And he had a very gentle smile also. Big, broad chest. And quite dynamic in all ways. So then he took off and he decided he wanted to go to South India. And he and one of his disciples, Satyatirtha, would travel together. And they went to South India and they began their debating against this philosophy of just monism. So, not monism, but Advaitism. And so he met many Jains and Buddhists and Nayakas and everything, and had great success in defeating them, and became very, very popular. Then he returned to Udupi, and then actually began a school, and he got many disciples. And then he had this desire to actually travel up north in India and visit Vyasadev, who was, we understand, is still living there up near Badrinath. And so he, on foot, you can imagine, if you know where Udupi is and you know where that is, it's thousands of miles of walking. I don't know if our walking monk would like to do that trek someday. It'd be interesting to see if you could do it. I don't know. And there wasn't any GPS, there wasn't any roads or markings. They just trek through the forest with tigers and cobras and very bad conditions to live in. But he walked all the way up there, meanwhile debating and talking to people and influencing everyone in his journey. At one time, his Satyatirtha got attacked by a Bengali tiger, and Madhvacharya just jumped in right in between the two and separated the tiger from his servant. So that's how strong he was and how courageous and bold he was in all his manners. So he went to Badrinath, and he stayed a little bit lower and at a temple there, and became very enlivened and did a lot of chanting and meditation, and then didn't know how he was going to get all the way up. I guess it was not an easy climb. And all of a sudden, one night, he kind of like just disappeared, and they couldn't find him. And for like almost 2 months, 7 weeks, he was gone, and he had actually disappeared somehow and gone to see Vyasadeva. And his disciples were worried that he died or something, you know, got lost. But then he came back, and he was all enlivened. He'd gotten the blessings of Vyasadeva and studied. And he, after that, he compiled a commentary on the Brahma Sutra. And Satyatirtha began writing some of these commentaries. But this is a very famous one. So then he returned back to Udupi and was teaching and there. And one day he was sitting on the beach and noticed there was a ship out on the ocean headed towards Dwarka. And we've been to that spot. Very nice. We had a very nice. It was just going sunset. It was really beautiful. We're being told the story of how he sat there and saw this boat, and the boat was in distress, and he somehow or other got them in safely. And the captain of the ship was very, very grateful and asked, you know, what would you like? And he said, oh, I'd like that big chunk of tilak there, and then it miraculously cracked open, broken open, or somehow was washed, and there was a beautiful deity of Krishna in there. And everyone else was amazed, but Madhvacharya goes, oh, nice deity of Krishna. And then they tried to move him. 30 men tried to move the deity to get it to the temple, to Udupi, and they couldn't pick him up. They couldn't budge him. And then Madhvacharya embraces the deity and walks the deity over, and they established him in the temple that's there today. And it's said that he lit the first lamp of worship, which is still lit now. And so this is a very special deity, a cowherd boy with a stick, and a very, very beautiful deity. And he established a very strict worship. All his disciples, they do a nirjal on Evrakadasi, and everything's very regulated, very pukka, and even to this day. And different sannyasis will take the worship for a certain amount of time. So everything's kept very, very pure and very, very nice, very powerful worship. So then, at that time, he did a lot of commentaries on the Mahabharata. He had 37 different works that he worked on. And then he decided that he wanted to go preach again. And he decided to go up to northern India again, walk all the way back to see Vyasadeva again. And so he met two scholars on the way, very nice scholars, and they ended up to become his disciples, Pranapagya and Nahari Tirtha, who are very, very important preachers in the Vaishnav line. And this time he saw Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva gave him a Shila, Ashtamurti was the name, and he worshipped that deity also. And on his journeys, there was one very strong man said to possess the strength of 30 men who challenged him to see how strong this Madhvacharya really was. And Madhvacharya said, no problem here. I'm going to put my toe right down here. You just lift up my toe. And the man could not budge it. And so he went away just like the tire with his tail between his legs and went off and was defeated by Madhvacharya. There's also some other stories. Let me see. I can't remember them all. Oh, one time he was in an area where the Hindus and Muslims were having some tension. And there was a river, and the Hindus were on one side and the Muslims were on the other side with all kinds of soldiers and everything. And they weren't allowing the Hindus to cross this river, and there wasn't any boats. And so Madhvacharya gets there with all his disciples and go, this isn't going to stop us, just some Muslim soldiers over there. So they all, I guess they were all on